Live with
Bill Jenkins.
Saturday night in Los Angeles, and welcome aboard. It's open mind. I'm Bill Jenkins, and are you ready to have your mind stretched just a little bit? Well, we think we will do that for you. And tonight, some new, dazzling, provoking information about our old friend, the UFO. Our visitors from alien space. Well, there we are. Want to find out about it?
Well, to help you find out about it, we have with us, on an encore appearance, Mr. Edwin Slade, president of the Laser Arms Corporation of Las Vegas, Nevada. Very, very involved in America's defense systems. Very involved in this phenomenon. At one time, we could look upon it, I suppose, Ed, as a phenomenon called the UFO. He's a national scholar. Where were you a national scholar, Ed? Come on.
Well, that was the National Science Foundation.
National Science. Let me turn on your... Which microphone? You're sitting there, too. Okay. Go ahead. Very casual show. The National... What?
National Science Foundation fellowship that I won as a student years ago.
All right. Talk closer to the microphone there. He's got so many papers in front of him. He's sitting between two of my mics, mic one and mic two. So we'll take mic two. That's good there. Edwin, I know you've been working with the government for many, many years in a lot of marvelously scurrilous ways. You're still very involved in America and what it's all about. Is there such a thing as a UFO?
Well, I'm here to discuss that tonight. I feel very committed to tell the story of what I believe is the current assessment of UFO posture, and I'd like to share that with the listeners.
Okay. Let me ask you again, in your estimation, a man who has been working with government, who still is, highly respected businessman, and providing some enormous technology for both the private and the government sector, do alien people come to the planet Earth?
I would say, and the best information that I have definitely is yes. And that is such an unthinkable subject by today's standards that you don't really get cross-pollination or discussion of the issue, but I'd like to discuss it tonight and get some of your listeners to start thinking on the subject.
You move around in high circles of government, Edwin. You know a lot of the people. You know a lot of the scholars. You know a lot of the scientists. You know a lot of the people at NASA. What do they think?
Well, what they think is not what they say.
Well, then what are they saying?
They're saying that it's true, but it's not anything to worry about, and they're just taking a very neutral public posture on the whole topic. But I'm here to say that the topic is so startling and exciting that a person really, if he looks at it candidly, can take a neutral posture. It's all too alarming.
Why is it alarming that we have visitors from alien, from other places?
Well, the thought of alien visitors has been with us a long time. But when you travel extensively throughout the world, as I do, and then you come up against groups of aliens, you're overwhelmed by the possibility, by the fact that it's not just a possibility, it's here at our present time. And I'd like to communicate my findings, which are really recent over the last few months, to your audience.
You have the floor.
Well, I'd like to start this conversation by saying...
He's opening up his briefcase here, which you have more stuff in your briefcase than I do for a trip to Europe.
Well, I'd like to start the conversation by saying our first broadcast dealt with some historical aspects of UFOs, and we showed
right.
that they were present in time throughout the history of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Going as far back as the Bible and before that to the ancient writings of nearly all civilizations.
It's been in every civilization.
And medieval reports and then reports prior to 1947. 1947 was considered the beginning of the UFO flaps, but clearly they were present in almost every year before that in modern America.
You know, we had some fascinating information from Zachariah Sitchin that's found in his new book, The Wars of Gods and Men.
Yes, I've read
that. Abraham was writing about the wars of the aliens, and in fact, the first nuclear holocaust was in the year 2024 B.C. The first nuclear bombs were dropped on the Sinai Peninsula. There were seven of them. And if you look at the Sinai Peninsula, and I have looked at a lot of photographs, aerial photographs, satellite photographs of the Sinai Peninsula, it is a classic devastated area.
Mm-hmm.
It was an enormously productive and fertile area from all points of history. Prior to that time, it was part of the cradle of civilization. Right now, even today, the rocks are black, and the geologists can tell you no reason why the rocks are black.
Yes, well, Moshe Dayan was responsible for discovering that Sodom and Gomorrah were radioactive, and his findings were greeted with a lot of skepticism when they first came out.
Well, according to Zechariah's work, when he was dealing with the historians of Mesopotamia and Babylonia, either that or they were science fiction writers, that Sodom and Gomorrah were included in that initial attack on a spaceport in the Sinai Peninsula.
Hmm. Well, it's all very remarkable. The more you study the record and the more you get into it, the more exciting it is. As I was saying, we did a show on the history of UFOs, and then we did a show on the technology, where these sources exhibited some unusual features of high technology. This week, I'd like to do a show on the current events of the UFO and their occupants.
Okay.
And there's an awful lot happening out there.
I know that you have spent time in Switzerland. With the Billy Meyer group?
Yep.
You learned some fascinating things there?
Mind-boggling, not fascinating.
I use that term so much. I used to say incredible, but I have to stop using that word, and I was properly corrected by one of our listeners who's quite a skeptic of the things that we get into. But incredible means something that is not to be believed. And we're not telling you things here not to be believed. So mind-boggling is good. Amazing, well, astounding is better. Incredible is wrong. Incredible is what Michael Jackson does.
Well, I'd like to begin this program by referring to a book published in 1981 by Fred Steckling. It's called Alien Bases on the Moon.
Now, Fred's been on the show a couple of times.
And he wrote a very detailed book, which, I'm sorry to say, is not currently available in bookstores.
True, but you can get it from Fred down. He lives in Vista, California.
They were once available in bookstores, but all the copies have been suddenly bought off by the authorities.
Is that a fact? Yep. You know that for it to be a fact?
I have here a photostatic reproduction, which I was lucky to get of his book.
I have a couple of copies at home. There were some of the things, if I can be on the other side of the coin for just a second, some of the assumptions that Fred made in his book were probably incorrect. In some of the pictures of the moon, some of the things that he thought were intelligently done were done by just the swiping process on the negative. I had that analyzed and looked very closely, and he agrees that that may have been the case. Some of the pools of water were simply negative work. But there is enough in Fred's work, there are enough pictures in there, that show that something is very definitely going on the moon other than mice eating cheese.
Well, I have 150 pictures that were reproduced in this book, and the most startling category is the pictures taken by orbital Apollos that show large lunar spaceships hovering over the moon. Some of these are 20 miles long.
20 to 25 miles long.
Yes.
8,000 feet wide.
Fantastic.
Carrying something somewhere. But they're carting away the moon.
Huh. Well, this alone is enough to make any scientist pause. And the fact that NASA didn't have any public discussion on this is very curious. It's more curious than the pictures themselves. These pictures include cloud formations on the moon, bases on the moon, cylindrical tanks in craters on the moon.
Seasons on the moon.
Yes, and...
Vegetation with seasons. Summer, winter, spring and fall.
Triangular and square storage pools, and also inscribed letters on the moon, like capital S's and crosses.
Very normal formations.
Well, this is all startling, and I must say, in all credit to NASA, that these pictures were not suppressed. They were published without comment. And
however, most of these pictures, Edwin, I think you'll find that if you were to send for those pictures, and they are in the public domain, as a citizen of the United States, you have a right to them. But let's remember that at Greenbelt, Maryland, where these pictures are stored, there is a staff of people, 300 of them, whose job is to doctor photographs. That's the only reason they are there. And why the United States government is paying 300 people to doctor space photographs is beyond my comprehension, other than that they are trying to cover up something. You can get some of these early NASA photographs. Order that same photograph now, and where you see an interesting subject in the early photographs, before they were doctored, you will see a shadow now.
Well, in all fairness, Fred mentioned some astounding photographs that were in the February 72 National Geographic. I went to the library and I got that issue, and sure enough, the space platform that he picked out in his photograph is in that magazine, also without comment.
Order that photograph now is what I'm saying to you, and you will find a shadow where you're seeing a space platform in that photograph.
Well, for anybody who's curious enough into the subject, these pictures are public record. In fact, the largest picture of the spaceship is from the NASA Lunar Orbiter 5, and it's photo number HR1033. Now, anybody who gets that picture is going to have a 20-mile spaceship that he could frame.
No, he'll have a shadow. I beg to differ with you.
Well,
if you order the picture from NASA now, you will get a shadow.
I'll tell you what, Bill. Why don't we order a HR1033 and good luck from the NASA Lunar Orbiter 5.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these pictures are very nice, and any good scientist who sees this is going to really, really think hard about this work. And it's a courageous thing to publish, and I just bring this as the very simple evidence that there are strange craft and things on the moon, which we have heard since antiquity. We have heard in the oldest known book, the Zohar, which predates the Bible. We have read there where the gods who inhabited the earth staged landings on Mars and the moon.
That was in the Zohar.
On the first page of the Zohar.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to earth on a Merkaba, which is a flying chariot. And this flying chariot came down from the heavens and started our civilization. Now, we have the very fine photographs of a Merkaba on the moon. Now, that's just too brilliant for words.
A lot of this also was repeated or augmented in the Kabbalah. One of our favorite guests here, and I can't wait for him to get back, is Dr. Philip Berg of the Kabbalah Institute of Research in New York City.
Well,
and Abraham wrote a lot of that, as you know. We're going to make Dr. Berg, I think, the chaplain of the Open Mind Show.
Well, that's excellent, because while we're on the subject of the Bible, I had something very important to say. I would say that the Bible, people often ask me, why is the Bible considered holy? And my answer is, because that is a word that best describes a most curious aspect of the Bible, which no other book has. It's a a really amazing thing. Although the Bible talks about mysterious and strange things, natural and supernatural.
Certainly they were to the writers of the Bible.
The thing that makes the Bible unique in the history of all earthly literature, and very few readers know this, and I'm sure that the Kabbalists know some of it, but I don't know how much of this secret information is out in the public's hands. I'll go into it tonight.
All right, we'll do that in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Edwin Slade. We're talking about the UFO. We expect a call from Larry Fawcett later on, somewhere hiding away on a holiday in the Adirondacks, if he can make it. And perhaps of other surprise calls, too. We were hoping that Alan Hynek could join us tonight on Little Round Table, but he has gone through a very, very serious operation, and he is very weak and will just not be able to be with us. In Earth space, they have been here, it seems. It's our information. It's the government's information. The Freedom of Information releases now that are taken, that Freedom of Information Act is letting the government give us, is showing that the government knows that the UFOs are here. They are now freely talking about the fact that they have been here. I refer you to Omni magazine of a couple of months ago. I hope you read the article in there about government officials who are now talking about how they have been having to deal with the UFO for quite some time. And if you're under the impression that the UFO is a lot of hogwash, you are not up with the fact of the matter. A lot of it has been very interested people who are saying a lot of things, and if you needed the imprimatur of the federal government of the United States to establish the reality of the UFO, we have it. They are now saying so. They are not, you know, calling news conferences about it, but the documentation is coming right out of the government now, and they just want you to quietly understand that there are aliens in our Earth space, and some of them wear white hats and some of them wear black hats. What's your situation there, Ed, now?
Well, the question was, why is the Bible considered holy? And I'd like to inform your listeners that if you count, do a word count in the Bible, and this has been done, you find some very curious things. The Old Testament is written in Aramaic, and the New Testament is written in Greek. And everything I'm going to say applies to both volumes.
Some of the New Testament was written in Aramaic also.
Yes, but all the text of the Bible obeys these properties. If you count the number of words in the Bible, they are divisible by seven. It doesn't sound like much because it could be an accident.
You're talking about the original script.
Yes.
Not the King James or the whatever.
No. That could be an accident. But if you count the number of words in each book of the Bible, that's divisible by seven. And it starts to look a little less like an accident.
Seven has always been an interesting number.
Yes, it's used many times in the Bible. But now the number of words in the Bible, the total number of words in the Bible, beginning in Aramaic or in Greek, that begin with a vowel, is divisible by seven. And the number of words divisible by seven that begins with a consonant is also divisible by seven.
So all of the words combined are divisible by seven.
Now, if you count the number of letters from front to back, it's divisible by seven, the number of letters, along with the number of words, is divisible by seven. And
makes me feel better. I was born on October 7th.
Now, all the letters that are scrambled in all the words, the number of letters that are vowels are divisible by seven. So I'm saying that the total number of vowels in the Bible, from front to back, is divisible by seven. And the number of consonants is divisible by seven. Now, if you count the words in the Bible that are used more than once, those different numbers of words are divisible by seven. It starts to get interesting. Now, if a word has various forms, like saint, saintly, sainthood, if you count the words used in more than one form, It's used a number of times. That's also divisible by 7. Throughout the Bible, no exceptions.
Hmm. And those guys didn't even have computers back then.
Well, I think our listeners are coming to see that the Bible was manufactured with the aid of some super vast computer, super intelligent computer that was used on no other book. No other book obeys these properties.
So the question runs, then, assuming all of that is factual, that there was a super intelligence involved in the writing of the Bible. There's one school of thought that is very mystic and says that it came from the spiritual creator of the entire universe. There is another school of thought that says it came from a super intelligent race of human-type beings.
Well, that will be answered soon. I think it's still an open question, but if I could continue, if you count up the number of nouns in the Bible, the number of nouns is divisible by 7. Now, if you count the proper names of the Bible, Adam, Noah, Abraham, all the names added up in the Bible, divisible by 7. Now, the female names are likewise divisible by 7.
Hmm. What about the male names?
7.
Oh, we got it too.
Yes. Now, if you count the number of words starting with A or Aleph, guess what?
What?
It's divisible by 7.
Hmm.
If you count the number of words beginning with B,
divisible by 7.
You got it. And so on through the entire alphabet of the Bible.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. I'm saying that this...
I wonder if our panel on religion on the line knows that.
No, I doubt it. I doubt it. This is a very obscure piece of information. And it's absolutely flabbergasting to know that you're reading some kind of giant acrostic and it makes sense. It has a text. I defy anybody to create a text of meaningful commentary using and being constrained by those rules.
Well, let's get this straight now. You're talking about going back to the, as far as we can go back, to the Arabic and the Greek and the Hebrew in which these were originally written.
Yes.
Using those texts.
Yes, using those texts.
Not
it
the English
work
text
in English.
That we
no.
will find in our Bible
no,
here at home.
No, no. That's why the book was
text.
Considered holy, and Bibles of ancient vintage were regarded with great deference, and they were copied with great care, and not a single letter was ever changed. And that's why all through the ages, the forces of evil and the forces of Satan were determined to destroy it, and such as the Hitler's book burning episode.
All right, now, that's fascinating stuff, Ed. I never heard that.
It goes on, it goes on.
And I
could spend the whole show on it.
I don't know, part of the groundwork for that is that the Bible is fraught with references as you get into the etymology of the Bible about the interference or the intervention, let's put it that way, of alien beings on Earth's society. In fact, they probably had everything to do with the fact that we are here now.
Well, they do, and
according to the Bible.
They claim that they do in the corresponding books of the Kabbalah and the Zohar, the supporting books of the Bible. The Bible itself,
as well as the ancient historians of Mesopotamia and Babylonia.
Absolutely.
As we pointed out when Zechariah was here, they were either incredible science fiction writers, which made Ray Bradbury look like he had been in kindergarten, or they were historians.
I just want to finish off this numerology, because people dismiss numerology as being irrelevant. I don't think this is irrelevant. I think this is very pertinent. And I think that someone should know the depth and the breadth of the numerology in the Bible before they can look at the Bible with any kind of judgment. The numerical value of a word is given in Hebrew by A equals 1, B equals 2, C equals 3, and then there are other rules for all the letters.
That's the next California lottery.
Well, naturally, you get a number for a word based on the letters it contains. And the numerical value, adding up all the words, all the letters, all the numbers, is divisible by 7.
You're bound and determined to get all these sevens in here.
Well, quickly, if you do that for, the alphabetical groups of words, like all the words beginning with A or Aleph, and if you take all of those words, add up the place numbers in the word, and make a giant sum in the Bible, first and last testaments, and it comes divisible by 7. It's an internal check. And it goes on, and naturally it spreads to the authors. When you write down the name of every author, of every one of the 66 books in the Old and New Testament, now it changes. The authors and the books are divisible by 11. And there's as many...
What happened to the 7? Did we lose an author along the way, or did they get just aced out and shouldn't have been?
No. When you add up the authors, it comes to a rule of divisible by 11. You have 66 books of the Bible, and they each have authors. You add up their numerological names, and those names are divisible by 7, and by 11, and it goes on and on. This book is really strange.
So 7:11 has a quite a meaning to it, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. It has an ancient and mysterious meaning.
It certainly has a possible meaning of great value in Las Vegas.
Your readers may want to know whence this information comes, because it's not very common to know it. And I'll tell you. In 1924, Stalin commissioned a scholar named Panin to defeat the Bible on ideological grounds. So Panin did an independent analysis paid for by Stalin, and he worked out these rules, and he discovered, much to his amazement, that these rules pertain to the Bible.
Probably to the consternation of Stalin.
Yes, and instead of defeating the Bible, he could only go back to Stalin and say, "My dear Stalin, I mean, we've got a book on our hands that's unreal."
What happened to Panin?
Well... That's why this publication has never been distributed.
To Siberia, he went.
It went to Siberia with everything else, yeah. Well, now, that's just my case for paying special attention to anything written in the Bible. The first word of the Bible is in the beginning, and it's in Aramaic, it's Bereshis. Bereshis was used a number of times in the Bible, and that number of times is divisible by 7. That's the first word. The last word of the Bible in the New Testament is hagios, or saint. Saint also was used a number of times throughout the Bible, and that's also divisible by 7.
I know something that's divisible by 3. This cluster of commercials, which is upon us.
Now, mobile has a
copy of that. And if you out there are interested in all of these things about the Bible that are divisible by 7, which shows a complexity that none of our writers of today could write, you just send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I will send you the material. And you can take it and play with it and amaze your friends and neighbors. Before we get to our callers, and I certainly want to get to them because they're already beginning to stack up and they want to talk to you, Edwin. You have been dealing with the intervention of aliens in Earth space for a long, long time. Are we getting any kind of information from them one way or the other?
Absolutely. There are many long-standing contacts, 3,110 to be precise, of humans who have been contacted over a period of 8 to 20 years consistently by the aliens. This is a two-way, ongoing conversation where they're being acquainted with extraterrestrial civilizations.
What's the source of your information?
The people who are contacted.
Oh, you're talking to the contactees,
yes.
And they are relaying information to you.
Yes.
How reliable are the contactees? How do you know they're not just making up a bunch of stories for you?
Well, that's a whole subject in itself. I think that the contactees are very sincere, and the stories are consistent throughout the world. And I'll have to tell you some of my personal experiences.
Do they have any way of establishing their credibility? You know, I could tell you, hey, I've got a, you know, I've been contacted here for the last, you know, 10 years.
Well,
I know the group here at KABC thinks I'm one of them.
Billy Meyer asked the same question. He said, this is all very exciting, but when I tell somebody, what credibility will I have? Tell me something in the future, not in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, all right, we'll tell you that very shortly you will discover a planet beyond Pluto. And he says, that's very good. In fact, they did discover the following year a planet beyond Pluto. The aliens say there are two more planets yet to be discovered. Then they said there are two moons past Jupiter's 15 moons.
We discovered those.
And we discovered those after the prediction was made. Now, these aliens know something. They know something. They're not just talking at random. And they've given contactees objects, and notably Billy Meyer in Switzerland received large rubies, which he put in a museum. And you can see them. They're up there.
You know, there are a lot of people that are very skeptical about the Billy Meyer experience. You've been there.
Yep.
You've been among his people. How do you feel? I mean, you're a man that has worked